books, I wonder? Let's see. There we go. Now, you were talking about the experiment
station, early days in Kodiak.
Yeah.
Well, did we? You want to start at the beginning, or did we have some of that on there?
No, I hadn't started it. So, yeah, if you want to start at the beginning again.
Well, we came to Kodiak over 50 years ago, and that experiment station had already folded up. So it was at least 60 years ago when the federal government had an experiment station in Kodiak Agriculture. And they was experimenting to raise beef because we didn't have very good transportation and no refrigeration. So we were trying to raise beef in Kodiak. And Kodiak Island was an ideal situation. We had lots of grazing lands. So, they had an experiment station in Kodiak. I don't know what happened to the house, but the barn is still there, up on the hill. And they had a experiment station in and Kelson Bay with a fine dairy barn. It was a nice one. Concrete floors and stalls, the whole works. And a nice farmhouse. I can't remember what happened to the farmhouse. But it was still
there. Was that the one that Tom lived in?
No. It was still there when I came to Kodiak. There was no road to Kelson Bay.
How did people get there? Just by plane?
There were no planes.
There were no planes in Kodiak either. No, you had to row a skiff, row a boat.
Oh, I see.
Or walk. And later on, horseback. I've been made that trip horseback many times before there ever was a road.
Wow.
But the experiment station cut beach rye at Kelson Bay and brought it to Kodiak in big skiffs, and there's pictures available of those skiffs. I have seen them loaded down with hay.
Oh, really?
Bringing them to Kodiak and storing them in that barn, and they brought had some of their cattle in Kodiak. I don't know which ones. And Wilton White's father was in charge of that.
Oh.
So Wilton is probably the only man alive today
in Kodiak.
In Kodiak, that knows the details of that, or maybe anywhere.
Yeah, he would be really good to talk to then, for sure.
You bet.
Have some beans.
And they had
that's for your fruit.
Yeah, bread and
they had bred and raised a prize bull. Over how many years, I don't know.
Thank you.
And the darn fool, he got his neck caught in the statute and choked himself to death. It broke his neck.
Oh, no. Got his neck caught in the what?
Stanchion. That's what holds their necks in.
Oh, right.
I don't know the exact details, but I know he died, I think, from a broken neck. They closed the experiment station immediately.
Oh.
Closed it down completely. That was the end of it.
So,
screw whenever you're ready.
Your wife said that you got up, or she came up in 1940. When did you come up?
39. Where are you from?
I'm from Oregon.
Oh.
I've been in Kodiak for about 3 years now.
Good for you. Come up here to go to school?
No, I came up to earn money working in the cannery and then go back down to school, and I liked it so much I haven't left.
I see.
Are you alone here then without your family?
Mm-mm. My sister lives here.
Oh.
Good for you. Pretty good college.
It is. It's a very good college.
Well, then when we came, I came. On the 4th of July, the Navy sent 3 PBYs to Kodiak to look in the possibility of building a naval base here.
Mm-hmm.
They come up to see what it looked like and see what was feasible. They were looking for an ice-free harbor. And they thought they had it at the base, but it does freeze over.
Mm-hmm.
But they were looking for a safe harbor. That was the main thing. They could build a Navy base around a harbor where they could anchor their ships. And I was working at the Fish and Wildlife Service that summer. And so we put out buoys for them to anchor their airplanes. I got pictures of those airplanes at anchor in front of Kodiak on the 4th of July, 1939.
Oh, neat.
Mm-hmm. So I know that's true. Shortly after that, the war intensified.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately starting, and probably, well, the rest of the summer they surveyed that base. They surveyed it. And Tom Nelson came to Kodiak. He was a rancher from eastern Oregon who'd gone broke in the Depression.
Mm.
One of the finest men I've ever known.
Mm.
And a real cowboy. And he packed for the army, he got a couple horses and he packed the surveyors around where they surveyed that Navy base. And the Amorn got it surveyed and in October, they started work on the base. And the first men that came to work were farmers from Matanuska Valley.
Mm.
See, they had 2 or 3 years before, farmers had come up there, but there was no cash. You know, that was the end of the Depression, and people don't understand what that Depression was that hadn't gone through it. This wasn't any money because they hadn't manufactured it. It was tough. But the first men that they needed came from Matanuska Valley, and they left their families there, and they came over here and started that Navy base. And the first ones, at the same time the road commission put a road through there. It was a one-lane bicycle road. But anyway, you could get over it with a car.
They had a bus that hung out over each side of the wheels.
Oh.
And if you rode on the outside of the bus, you were looking right down the ocean. It was no fun.
I bet.
See, the road used to go up pretty high along the mountain, not down where it is now.
Oh, I see.
Well, anyway, the first thing they did was build a dock out there so they could get materials in, and they built a bunkhouse, and a cookhouse and a bunkhouse combined, and probably they had 40 or 50 men working the first fall. And I went to work in November. 40 or 50 men. There was quite a few of us lived in town, and they put a bus back and forth, and we lived in town and went back and forth to work. And I have a copy. Sims Drake Puget Sound was a contractor. And I have a copy of the contract that was drawn up between Drake Puget Sound and the U.S. Navy base to build that base. And the highest paid craftsman on that whole base was a leverman for the dredge. He got $1.41 an hour.
Oh my goodness sakes.
I've got a copy of it.
And what were you doing?
I was carpenter.
Mm.
I went to work as carpenter. Eventually there was 3,000 workmen on that base. That was one of the finest construction jobs under the American flag. And next to Cooley Dam, the biggest at that time. And because it was right at the end of the Depression, labor was easy to get.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in labor from all the state, all over the United States. And they were top men. And I worked on a crew of 80 men when 80% of them could have been the foreman. They were that good. Mm-hmm. And they built that whole base in 3 years. It involved every craft because we didn't have communication. Communication was radio and it was terrible.
Uh-huh.
So the decisions had to be made on the job. You didn't have to ask Washington. You couldn't build a base today like that because you had to go down through the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
But if there was a problem, well, they just went over to the engineers and they'd solve it and you had it done. And It was a hell of a fine, great job, I'll tell you. Now, Mom can tell you about the Army. The Army came in, and there were 30,000 soldiers on this island at that time when the Japs went over Attu and Kiska.
Mm-hmm.
So Seattle and San Francisco got worried. They were afraid the Japs would come right down the coast. And so they fortified Alaska. And Kodiak was the main supply center for all of Alaska. And it was a busy place, I'll tell you. And then there were 30,000 soldiers came to Kodiak. And they had a tough go of it. They lived in little bunkers and dugouts all over the place.
Hmm.
Up on Pillar Mountain and Narrow Cape and Long Island and off by Yuzinki and every point they had fortified. And they just lived up there in weather like this. And then Mom can tell you about the hospital that they built. How many bed hospital was that, Mom? 300 or something?
Oh, we had 11 wards. Excuse me a minute. It is difficult to talk with your mouth full. The Army, when it came in, incidentally, instead of waiting until they built a base like the Navy did, lived in tents at what they portrayed as beautiful swampy acres.
Where was that?
Have another sandwich.
Oh, that'll be plenty for me. Thank you.
It was known as Fort Greeley. And it was out where the... near Boy Scout Lake.
Mm-hmm.
In that area. And going on toward the present base. About as far as the Buskin was. And they built temporary buildings in great haste, and they're all gone now. And so is Fort Greeley has been moved up onto the mainland, even the name.
Hmm.
But they built a hospital, which was designed, they claimed anyway, we never had any bombs, so that a bomb of that day, that was before the nuclears and all those things,
mm-hmm.
could not destroy more than one unit of it. So it was built on corridors. They had these long corridors which were just wooden. They were not heated, but they did have a floor and a roof and sidewalls. And then a building. And there were 11 wards and operating sections and doctor's quarters and nurse's quarters and laboratories all in each in separate buildings.
Oh.
So that when I was working with the gray ladies, you had miles to run to get around 11 wards in one afternoon's work because they were so far apart.
Uh-huh.
And the corridors were chilly too in winter, very cold. The buildings themselves were heated, but not the corridors. And each ward had, I think, around, would you say 50 beds?
I suppose.
50, 60 beds. And then at the entrance, two or three private rooms for critically ill or females.
All blacked out in case of an Army a Navy or a bombing raid, shutters over all the windows.
They weren't shutters, it was black paint.
Okay.
There was absolutely no way to open them and get air or sunshine or anything else into any building on the base. As far as I know, they ran around with that paint truck and sprayed all the windows black. I know on the Army base. I don't know for sure what they did on the Navy base.
When did they do that? When the Japanese bombed Dutch Harbor? Is that when they did that?
About then, yes. When they hit the Aleutians the first time, to their knowledge. But the wards were built with a sun parlor on the end. Which was nowhere to use after the black paint.
Right.
It was supposed to be a place where they could go and sit in the sunshine and read and talk and things like that. And there was a recreation hall also, another building. That was the Red Cross Center there. And we had a group of gray ladies, which it amuses me very much, the folly where all they go about giving anybody a pass to get on a base now, who were trained to go out there. Gray ladies do not do any nursing service. They are what they call recreation workers. They wrote letters and gave parties, and we baked a cake for every serviceman who had a birthday in the party in the hospital. And read to people who couldn't see, just talked to people who wanted to be talked to, and had a big Christmas party. I spent a couple of Christmases out that hospital. And the anyway, there were about 10 of us, including Frosty Johnson, and I can't think of anybody else who's still here now. I could dream up most of the names, but they wouldn't mean anything anymore. And when we had prepared the thing, they took a list of our names and we filled out a little form where we were born and where we came from or something like that, and carried it out to the base and issued us passes that were good anywhere on either the Navy base or the Army base. And bing, that was it. And nowadays, it's more than your life's worth to get a pass.
Yeah.
Well, mine was probably the first patient in that hospital, because we had a blizzard and the Griffin Memorial Hospital was froze up, and she came down with acute appendicitis.
Mm.
It was not only froze up, its electricity was out.
So, local doctor, Dr. Johnson, Dr. Bob's dad, called up his friend, Major Yellen?
Yellen, Colonel Yellen.
Colonel Yellen, who was in charge of the Army Hospital, this tremendous complex that we've described, without any patients. See, this was built anticipating terrible casualty list from Attu and Kiska, which never materialized. So they were just looking after the few casualties of Army boys that was out in these foxholes, you see. They just had a few hospitals. But anyway, they just got this great big complex finished, completely staffed, no patients. She came down with acute appendicitis. They were just tickled to death to come and get her. Sent Army ambulance in. And
well, the whole family were Army. There were a lot of names he could give them that they knew. Because before World War II, the Army was a small town family.
So
it seemed like everybody knew everybody else, or at least who they were if they didn't know them.
They sent an Army ambulance in. We lived up on the hill. They couldn't find the road, so they came right up
through the fields.
Right up through the fields. Loaded her on a stretcher and took her out there. Operated on her. And I was working 10 hours at the base. We were working 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I couldn't get home very much. And because she was the only gal in the hospital with all these soldiers, they decided they wasn't going to let her come home. Hell, they kept her there all winter.
Not that long.
And they trained her as a laboratory technician.
Oh.
So then she came back to Cody. Came back to Cody. After a while, I thought everyone was going to get a wife back. And
well, the nurses just loved it. They said, you know, we've never had a situation where all the boys leap out of bed, wash, shave, scrub, clean up, so they could come in and say hello to you. And there was a constant procession of them going through my room.
See, there was hardly any women on Kodiak Island. They shipped them all out. It just wasn't any.
They shipped them out of town, huh?
Yeah, this
out
was
to Seattle.
Oh, my goodness sake.
All dependents on of the Navy or of Navy or employees. I guess there wasn't any Army here at that time. The Army ones just didn't come in. Were gathered up and tossed on a ship and taken to Seattle the minute war was declared.
They
did not want the men to have their minds on anything but defense.
Well, how did you get by that?
I lived in town, and I simply flatly said no.
Oh.
And we were both civilians. They couldn't force us.
Have a cookie.
Thank you.
Have some fruit.
Oh, you did?
I'm going to have some. And you can have some more. They said they couldn't do anything about it. If he'd been military, it wouldn't have worked.
If you kind of get interested in this history, you should read a book called A Thousand Mile War.
I did.
Well, we're talking about the same thing. Mom and I knew a lot of those people. It's in that book. For instance, when they used to send those squadrons of PBYs from Kodiak out there, that was the only long-range amphibious bomber we had. The Navy had never had any experience in these waters in Alaska. So they tried to run their war by the book. And they would decide that on November 2nd at 9:30 in the morning, they'd send a squadron of PBYs to Attu or Kiska or Old Harbor or wherever.
To bomb.
They didn't have any weather reports. Didn't have any navigation. They'd send a whole squadron up there and they'd lose the whole works. Disappear. Terrible. It took them a long time to finally say, hey, we better not run this war on a schedule. We better listen to the weather reports.
Yeah.
The same thing would happen. They'd make up convoys here. Maybe several hundred ships, several hundred freighters. Take them a month to get them all together. They'd be freighters and transports and tugboats and barges with all the war materials they were shipping the chain. And there again, they'd start and say, well, now on November 2nd, we'll pull anchor. And they might run into one of these terrible blizzards. And they'd lose half of them. There was more ships lost between here and the end of the Lucian chain by the weather than there was by enemy bombs. Just terrible.
That is terrible.
Just terrible. There was that lots of that coast were never even chartered at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They made one good choice. There was a character in Alaska by the name of Squeaky Anderson. You read about it.
Yeah, I remember the name in the book.
Rough and tough old Alaskan. Chewed tobacco and swear. But he knew the conditions of this country. Mm-hmm. And by golly, they put him in charge of... He was a beachmaster. And he was the only one that knew how to organize and slip around the weather and so on. And he was a good man. Yeah, Squeaky Anderson. The Navy sure made a lot of blunders in this country. Terrible. Well, another side story that mixes in with the Army base. The Army also had outposts on all of the points around Kodiak Island, watching for Japanese submarines and so on. They had to supply them from inland. They didn't have boats to go around and take their supplies to them. They also didn't want, they were hidden, so they didn't want to make trails so that the enemy would know they were there. That's why they built these camouflaged foxholes and living quarters. You can still find them around here.
Right, the little bunkers that are on the...
And General Corlett was in charge. Great man, Army general. And he hired this Tom Nelson that I spoke of a little while ago, the next year, to supply these Army outposts with pack horse. And he would pack, the only contract he had with him was a handshake. He said, I'll pack anything except batteries. Battery acid would ruin a horse's back, you see.
Oh.
And gasoline. He wouldn't pack anything else he would pack. And he had a string of 20 horses and one soldier helping him. And each week he'd go to a different outpost. And when he came back one night at midnight, right about where that hospital was, he turned his horses loose to graze. He was such a wonderful horseman, he could turn his pack, just as 20 pack horses loose anywhere. In 2-3 days, come back and go pick them, go catch them. He was that good. So he just turned them loose and he had a bell on the bell mare so that he could find them. And there was a young soldier on guard duty in the middle of the night, dark as pitch, and this cowbell kept coming closer to him. And he just got scared to death. And he hollered, stop or I'll shoot. Halt. Halt or I'll shoot. Bang. And he shot the old mare right through the neck.
Oh, no.
But it was a steel jacket bullet, and it didn't hit him, it didn't hurt him. So, within a week, Tom had the old mare back in the pack string. So, from that day on, Tom didn't think that Army ammunition was any good at all. He'll shoot a horse right through the neck, and she wouldn't even stop grazing. So, sometime later, Tom was going to Calston down the road with a bunch of soldiers and a jeep, and one of their guns went off. And that bullet ricocheted around through that jeep and went right through his leg. And the soldiers, "My God, I'm shot!" Tom says, "Hell, that nothing but an army bullet. That won't hurt you." Yeah, wouldn't even hear a horse. it was a lot of fun.
They used to have a guard gate out at the end, right before you go up the high hill beyond Bell's Flats.
Oh, uh-huh.
If you're going on out into the country. What do they call it?
Salami Creek Hill.
Yeah, Salami Creek Hill. Mm-hmm. And they'd have one lone Marine.
Better have another cookie.
Okay, thank you.
And the Marines would get bored. And finally, they'd get to fooling around with their guns, shooting at targets and practicing fast draws and so on. And finally, so many of them shot themselves in the foot that they moved the guard gate into close to the base.
And took their ammunition away from them.
That was weird. You'd think after the first one, the rest of them, you know, would be careful, but no, it just kept happening.
How long were you working in the hospital?
Oh, 2 or 3 years, wouldn't it be? About. When the Army pulled out, we quit. They never had us gray ladies in the nurses' hospital. When I left the hospital after my appendicitis thing, Colonel Yellen said to me that having a woman around, you know, had made quite a difference, and I ought to be able to find some women who come on out and visit with the boys. So he asked for that, and I went in and talked to Frosty and asked her how we could organize it so it would work. And she said, "Well, we can do it through the Red Cross, Great Ladies." The disadvantage of Gray Ladies was that we did have to wear uniforms the same as nurses did, only they were a gray seersucker dress with a white collar and white belt and white shoes. A copy of a nurse's cap with the back gray and the band white and a red cross right in the middle of the top. And at first, that didn't do so well. But pretty soon, the boys began realizing that we were not nurses and officers who were in a position to heckle them. I mean, they had these nurses around, but they were not companions.
Yeah.
I think it did a good job. Then I will admit that one Christmas day we were out there going around delivering presents to all the wards and so on, a couple of us. And the chaplain came dashing in, and he says, "Look what I found." And here was this gal, she was from New York City. She'd come up for a secretarial job of some kind, but she was dressed to the teeth. These great big spike heels in the snow yet. And, you know, a fancy hat and fancy clothes and stuff like, well, styles that had never reached Kodiak by any means. So we grabbed her and he said, So I took one look at her and I told her, "Come with me, I'll show you where you need to go." So she went trustingly with him. After all, he was a chaplain. He delivered her to the hospital. And we took her through the wards. And after a short time, she started cooperating. And you never saw such excitement.
Oh, I bet.
It was the one thing we did that really got every boy at the hospital feeling better and happy and excited. Women like this still existed. They didn't all wear uniforms. Excuse me. Hello? Oh, hi. Okie doke. Well, wonderful. Have you got enough of most things? Uh-huh. You need some more salads, in other words. Uh-huh. Well, of course, you and Judy could maybe make a salad between you. Yeah, you did. Okay, thanks a lot, Dorothy. Bye. For the potluck, I get to bring the pickles and olives and stuff. Something I can go out and buy and not have to make, which right now I don't have time to make.
There's a newspaper that the base put out during them days. Kind of interesting. I like to look at that. I think probably once a week somebody put out a little newspaper, what was going on. Give you an idea of what.
You want any more?
No, I've had plenty. Thank you. It was really wonderful.
Thank you.
And
it's very simple, but it should sustain until evening. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. There's that contract.
Oh.
Why don't you look at that and you fax it? I mean, you can.
We'll
just pat it. You want to? Because that might be the only one in existence.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm sure
Dr.
Stevens would really love to have a copy.
That might be the only one in existence.
If it's snow, then rain. Yeah. Sure can. Tim, for you.
Oh, Tim? Okay. Got your snow shovel out?
I'll just stick this food away and
I discovered that this morning. I said, Tim must have been on the weed. I bet. Well, I'm glad you called. Okay. No, I found out this morning. It. You bet.
Okay.
Yeah, you bet. Bye bye. Yeah, that's a lot of interesting things in there. You see the wages in there?
Yeah, I did.
Isn't that something, 80 cents an hour?
Yeah.
For workmen.
But this is a whole bunch of stuff just happened to... Letters from Sims Drake to the men. Tell you. If you just promise that you won't let any of this stuff disappear, you could take it with you and study it. I bet you'll...
Oh, that would be just wonderful.
It dates back, you see, to 1942.
Could I...
Air raid instructions. You see, there's the air raid instructions.
Oh, neat.
See that? Here's instructions for construction of gas-proof shelters.
Oh my goodness sakes, this stuff is delicate, isn't it?
Yes, and probably there isn't another copy of it in existence.
How do you get those things, dear?
Oh, I hang on to them. And then... This is the Williwas, and this, now when you read this, you got to remember there were 30,000 men on this island, no women.
Okay.
And everyone was working 7 days a week, 10 hours a day. So they've got lots of poems and stories about their gal friends.
Could I show this to Dr. Stevens?
Yeah, I'll let you have all this stuff, and you just...
I'll be very, very careful with it.
You be very careful. It doesn't get away.
I'll be very careful with it.
Because you see, 50 years ago, Dr. Stevens was pretty young.
Yeah.
He wasn't very... this all happened before his time. Yeah, well, you can go through all this stuff, and you'll probably write a book on it. I don't know what that is. Dick Sutler. Oh, it's a gun. Something to do with guns, I guess. I don't know. We packed rifles in our toolbox, you know, for 2 or 3 years out here, and a gas mask.
Your wife mentioned the gas mask that was handed out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a rifle in my toolbox for a couple of years.
Huh. And how many air raids, or how often were there air raids here?
There lots of practice air raids.
Yeah.
Not very many. We had, I'm sure, some. Mm-hmm. See, those days...
It was like the practice tsunamis we had a while ago.
Yeah. That's how I envisioned
it. They weren't practices. We thought they were real, but no tsunami came.
And the mail was censored. Well, anyway, I think they just, that's the thing to do, is just as long as you're getting interested in this thing. Like,
a lot of the censorship was weird.
You have this.
For example, if you subscribed to a magazine and it came through to you through the mail, it would be all chopped up. With stories cut out by the censors that they didn't think should come up here where the enemy might have spies.
Huh.
But you could go down to the drugstore and buy the same magazine, ship freight, with nothing done to it.
Oh, that's funny.
Everybody promptly canceled their subscriptions. The drugstore doubled its orders.
Did they censor private mail also?
Oh, yes. All mail.
See, this was a little newspaper that the contractors put out.
Oh.
Someone that worked for them in their office. 1942. And they're the cartoonists, you see, and they had a lot of fun building, making that. And I think that little paper came out once a week. And I think there's two of them here. Anyway, there you are. That keeps you busy for quite a while. Reading that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Have another cookie.
Thanks. So how many years were you working on the base?
I think we built that in 3 years. Then I went commercial fishing.
Well, 41 is starting December, 42, 43, 44. Yeah, I think that's about right. I went outside in 45. And the war up here was still going on. But VJ Day came.